I just saw Bucky's grin. I knew they're in trouble. We're going to be up for this.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe. Game changed.
Hello and welcome to House of Rugby Ireland here on Joe. I am delighted to be back with the guys. We have a massive show coming up for you all as we react to that British and Irish Lions squad announcement. We'll be joined later on by South African reporter Craig Gray and Springbok legend Victor Matfield to get their takes on that squad announced earlier by Warren Gatland. But first, lads, there's some huge shockers in it. You know, names that should be there, names that are there. Ian, what's your original, your initial impression?
No. First, Emer, welcome back to the show. And a huge congratulations on making the team of the Six Nations. It was a great, great achievement, locking down the full back slot. Well done.
Thanks very much for that, Ian. Thanks, guys. Yeah, delighted. My mother must have been voting, I don't know, she must have put 100 votes in to get that. So,
looking on your own Instagram, please vote for
sliding into your DMs looking for votes. No.
Yeah.
Thank you. Cheers to that. It was a honour to be put on it, but again, a big shock, similar to the boys that were named today. So what do you think, Ian?
Yeah, it was very interesting, as always, the Lions squad. There's plenty of surprises, and I think for me, you know, Bundy Akie getting in was certainly left field. You know, he didn't play a whole lot in the Six Nations. He's had, you know, pretty good form with Connacht without shooting the lights out. So he was definitely one that stood out for me. Plenty of disappointments in there, you know, with the likes of James Ryan, Johnny Sexton, even someone like Keane Healy, I thought, you know, had a lot of good form going for him and you know, has probably been picked ahead of Andrew Porter, but might have lost out to the fact that Porter can play both sides of the scrum, which is invaluable when you can only have, you know, 37 in your squad.
Yeah. What about you, Craig? Who were you most surprised that was left out, first of all?
It's got to be Johnny. I would have been convinced he was going. So, really gutted for him now. To be honest, I was shocked. I think everyone would have been shocked at that call. So, sure, the coaches have their reasons, but maybe the fact that there was no Irish coach, you know, on that coaching ticket, no voice there to maybe, you know, talk reason into it, because I think that they'll miss him over there personally. But on a more positive note, I think, CJ Stander, I mean, a lot of Irish people would have thought he would have been in a good position to go. But on the flip side of that, you have, you know, Jack Conan going, who is definitely a bolter. And I can kind of see why they've picked him as well. You know, he only played in the win over England, which was a really impressive performance by him. But I think they've obviously gone for a number eight who has that ability to shift the ball, and he's got, you know, great footwork in and around the contact area. And I think coming up against the South Africans, such big men, he could be really worthwhile over there. So I was delighted to see him getting picked as well.
I want to dive a little bit deeper into, I suppose you mentioned Bundy at the start, Ian, and then obviously Sexton's not in, and CJ. Like, they're three really big omissions that when we were picking our squad, we definitely had them three in anyway. So we were well wrong. But there's obviously more to it. Like, you have to see Bundy as a player that, you know, will be physical against the South Africans. That's clearly the reason why he's picked. And if we look deeper into why Johnny Sexton isn't picked, like, is it solely down to his concussion, or is it that they don't know the player he is both on and off the field?
I think when you look with the Bundy selection, if you look at the guys who've probably missed out most, you'd probably say Henry Slade and Gary Ringrose. And if the tour was in Australia, I think Gary or Slade would definitely be going ahead of Bundy. But because it's South Africa and how their style of rugby is so physical, the coaches have obviously decided to go with a bit more power there. So it's definitely fallen in his favour that the tour this year is in South Africa. I think for Johnny, I wouldn't be overly concerned with the, you know, the injury stuff. I think he'll bounce back. He usually does. And he usually bounces back with form straight away. You know, there's been Six Nations that he's been leading into and had niggling injuries, gets to game one, and he always performs. The biggest frustration for him there, you'd look at the guys who've been picked ahead of him, the likes of you know, Farrell or Russell. He completely outplayed them in the Six Nations. You know, I think Dan Biggar definitely deserves to go. He's, you know, he led Wales throughout the Six Nations. They won the competition. You know, I'd have no qualms with that. But I'd be very much in the same camp with Fergus that, you know, Johnny offers a huge amount both on the field and off it. And I think they'll really miss him. You know, even if you look at goal kicking, like Russell's goal kicking for me is not good enough. And if that's going to be an issue on tour, that they're going to go to the second test and go, well, we actually can't pick this guy because his goal kicking is not reliable enough. That's when you'd need someone like Johnny to be in the picture and go, well, look, he can actually shore things up for us, win the second test and make it go down to a decider.
Yeah, but if you look at the other hand, like you've got Biggar who can kick, you've got Stuart Hogg who can kick, there's Farrell who can kick that I probably named at other positions instead of out half, like obviously Farrell and Hogg as well there. So they obviously looked at it and brought a squad that they feel could, you know, be a well-rounded squad as well at the same time, but it definitely is one of the big shocks. I suppose Keith Earls is another one, I think, as a winger for, do you think he was good enough to go or third test?
It would have been third tour, yeah. He would have been up there, like we were talking about him anyway. So I think even someone like Josh Adams, right? Yeah, he played in a team that won the Six Nations, you know, they won the competition, and the team that wins the competition inevitably gets the most players picked. You know, Warren Gatland knows them so well before Wayne Pivac came in. So that would have fallen in Josh Adams' favour. I'd say, you know, Keith would have lost out maybe to someone like him. Actually, Doohan van der Merwe as well. He had a brilliant Six Nations. And they're obviously bringing him because he has an X factor that other wingers that they're bringing probably don't have. You know, he's almost like a Northern Hemisphere version of Jonah Lomu. Like, he breaks so many tackles. It's phenomenal. And against the bigger guys down there in South Africa, he could be a really good weapon. But going back to the centres that was picked, actually, and I agree with you, Mads, about Gary Ringrose and Henry Slade. You know, they'll definitely be extremely disappointed because, you know, look at someone like Chris Harris. You know, he played pretty well at times during the Six Nations, but he was certainly a bolter. I didn't see him going. So to take someone like him, and I think someone like him would point out maybe the reason that maybe specialist positions going to the on a tour like the Lions Tour sometimes miss out, because he can kind of play 12, 13, or he can even play on the wing. So I'm sure that fell in his favour for that one.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I definitely think as well, like, timing and injuries definitely played a factor in some of the key Irish guys missing out. You know, Gary hasn't had a clean run of it over the last 6 months between breaking his jaw. You know, he's been in and out. He hasn't had the opportunity to string together 3, 4, 5 performances on the bounce where he's gathering momentum and people are all talking about him. James Ryan's, you know, a similar one. He'd injury issues at the start of the year. His form, you know, in reality hasn't been to the incredibly high standard he has set himself. But I think the likes of himself and Johnny Gray can feel hard done by with the likes of Courtney Laws getting in ahead of him.
Yeah, absolutely. And even going back there to the James Ryan comment there, like, Hugo Monier had him absolutely tipped to start there with Mauro Itoje. Like, I think we all had him on our list at some stage when we were making our teams. And there's just so many surprises, both in and both out, that there are so many talking points about this selection, not just on the Irish squad alone. Like, you know, if you think of it, there's like Sexton, Ryan, Ringrose, Josh Navidi, Billy Vonopola, CJ Standard, Keith Earls, Kyle Sinclair, like, all those players haven't made it. And I think, you know, we would have definitely put, what, 5 out of that gang of them on our teams for sure. I suppose going on to the ones that are selected, and we kind of touched on it at the start there, but there is, you know, well deserved, I suppose, with the lads that are there. You know, some of the lads we had on our squad, Henderson has been playing well and has always been playing well. I suppose from your Ulster perspective, Ian, you know, he'll obviously be delighted, and absolutely well deserved from him.
Yeah, certainly. I think, like, the likes of himself and Ty Byrne, I think, has been the, you know, probably the form back five player in Europe over the last, you know, two seasons, you know, consistently coming up with turnovers. He gets through a huge amount of work. I wonder, were they concerned about his size? He's probably not the biggest guy, but, you know, his ability to get over the ball probably counteracted that. And he's someone who I was delighted to see travel. Another one who I was very happy to see go is Sam Simmons. I think he's been fantastic. You know, obviously played against him in the Premiership the last couple of seasons. He's definitely drawn the short straw with Eddie Jones. I don't know what's happened there, but, you know, he hasn't had a look in despite being European Player of the Year, Premiership Player of the Year. And he's backed up that form from last year, this year. I think it's unfortunate that they've gone for him over CJ. You know, that would have been a great story there. But I think we've been speaking about it previously, Fergie. You know, Jack Conan, someone who probably has a bit more to his game. It's not just a straight up and down ball carrier. He's a great offloading game. He's got great footwork. You know, he's someone who could definitely string together some good performances and put his hand up for a starting position in one of the tests.
Yeah, I think those two eights, like even you taking those two eights in isolation, Jack Conan and Sam Simmons, that kind of points straight away towards the Lions playing a certain way and maybe not playing the way that Gatland's teams have always played. Maybe they, you know, realize that going over to South Africa and trying to beat them physically, it's just not going to be doable. So picking those guys would show that maybe they're going to move the ball around a lot more, because those guys have that, they have that footballing ability with the ball in hand, but they're both so quick and their footwork is brilliant in contact. So it's an interesting one.
Yeah, another interesting talking point is there's obviously quite a few Scottish coaches involved this year, and It's the biggest representation of Scotland ever this century. So 8 Scottish players, one of them notably being Hamish Watson, who has been spectacular during the Six Nations, and I think absolutely well deserved. He was a guy we chatted a lot about, and his impact on the game, and it's well deserved his selection as well, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, coming off the Six Nations, he was player of the tournament. You know, the player of the tournament has to deserve to go. He has his own style of play. He's very good at getting over the ball. He's, you know, he's a bit of a pocket rocket of a ball carrier. It will be very interesting to see how he goes for the Lions. You know, he's got a very specific role in that Scottish team. You know, whether he can nail down a starting spot on, you know, on that open side flank for the Lions, it will be very interesting to see how he goes in the kind of preliminary matches. But yeah, look, he's such an exciting player, and as Ferg said, he's someone who has an offloading game. He's got very good footwork. And for someone who's not the biggest of guys, he certainly packs a punch, you know, far, far bigger than the weight he carries.
Yeah, I think that Tom Curry going at the other 7, as probably the other 7 as well, like I'd look at that and think that I understand where they pick him because he's extremely physical, but I didn't think he had his best Six Nations. And I don't actually think he's been playing his best rugby the last number of months. And I feel for Josh van der Fleer because he was in the conversation amongst us, but amongst a lot of pundits were pointing him out. I know Sam Warburton was talking about him and a number of guys from the way he played with Ireland and with Leinster when he went back there in the knockout game. So he'll certainly feel hard done by, but I suppose they have a bit of both there with Hamish Watson, as you said, Mads. Small, very good at getting over the ball. And then you've got the flip side, you've got Curry, who brings that physicality when they need it.
Yeah. Who are you most excited to see? Like, you know, the squad is named, there's 37 phenomenal players there. Some surprises, some not so surprises. Fred, who are you most excited about, you know, getting an opportunity to play in, I suppose, the biggest test of, you know, rugby?
Well, I'm so excited for them all. I think, from an Irish perspective, I have to say that for the likes of Jack Conan and Tadhg Byrne, you know, they in ways that they've both done it the hard way. You know, Tadhg Byrne's journey to get to this point is a pretty cool story. You know, being left out by Leinster, heading over to Scarlets, forging his way over there, winning a Pro 12 trophy with them, coming back and being one of the mainstays in the Munster side and now in the Irish side, and all of a sudden he's playing for the Lions. So phenomenal kind of rise for him. And it's been cool to watch. So very excited to see him pull the jersey on. And then the other one, again, is probably Jack Conan and Robbie Henshaw, because Jack Conan has had a tough few seasons with injury, you know, and people kind of forgot about Jack for a while because the likes of Caelan Doris were playing so well. CJ was repeatedly playing well for Ireland. But any chance he got in this small window when he's been fit the last six or seven months, he's been incredible. And he showed just how different to 8 he is. So delighted to see him go. And lastly, Robbie Henshaw, because, you know, just like anyone, when that's getting called out on TV, I'm sure he was as nervous as Adam Wynne-Jones, as would have been, as Johnny Hill or Sam Simmons or some other bolters that other people might not have seen coming. But Robbie getting the nod and knowing that he's going, he's in the best form of his life. So I'm really excited to see him. Hopefully he'll play himself into the test side once he gets over there.
Yeah. What about you, Ian? Who are you most excited about?
No surprise there. Fergie's excited for all the Leinster boys.
Mattai's actually a Munster player, which
I know, but he was previously with Leinster. But yeah, I think the two wingers for just like you cast me as well.
I only ever talked to
this. You only talked to me on this podcast. It's been 5 years since I've spoken to you. I think the two wingers in Zamet and Van der Merwe, you know, they're two, Duhan Van der Merwe, they're two really exciting guys. It'd be interesting to see how they go in the warm-up games. That back three, you know, I'm sure Hogg will nail down the 15 slot. They're going to be really, really exciting to watch. Coming up against, you know, probably the best back three in the world in South Africa.
See, like 6 months ago, we were inside in that studio chatting about Six Nations. I think it was Autumn Nations. And you were talking about this Rhys Samet guy. Like, what? So who the hell is this guy? Like, what a journey for him.
Yeah, look, it's been incredible. I think when you've got speed, the speed that he possesses, you just need to get opportunities. And when you do get those opportunities, you make the most of them. And we saw in the Six Nations, once he gets a glimmer, you know, to open up, the guy's uncatchable. He's, you know, I'd love to know what speed times he's running, but I'd say it's, you know, 11, 12 meters per second. I'd say if you ran the 100, he'd go close to break in 10 seconds. And he's a very good rugby player on top of that. It's not like he's just, you know, all out speed. He's good in the air. He's physical when he needs to be. He's got good footwork. You know, he is such an exciting guy to watch. And I knew from being in Bristol that Gloucester were really excited about him last year, and the few chances he got in the Premiership, he stepped up and he really deserved his chance for Wales. And he took it with both hands. So it's great to see someone like that, you know, young. It reminds me, Fergie, a bit like Lukey Fitz. Like, Lukey Fitz made the Lions tour. I think he was only maybe 2 years out of school. You know, that was back in 2009. And arguably played the best rugby of his life on that tour.
Yeah, and Earlsy as well. Keith Earls went on that tour as a bolter. And, yeah, I mean, from the other nations, like, he would definitely be the standout for me, the likes of Rhys Samet, like the stuff he's been doing in the Six Nations on the biggest stage for the first time. He does have that speed, but I was actually very impressed with his defense, as Mad said. And they, like, some wingers are very fast and they score some tries and they have a bit of space, but he's actually been scoring tries in small spaces. And when he's getting knocked into touch, you know, he has that awareness, spatial awareness that only the really, really top finishers like Brian Habana do. So I think from a Northern Hemisphere perspective, he's one of the most exciting talents to go down as a backline weapon probably in an awful long time.
Yeah.
Ferg, did you think that some of the English guys were a bit lucky to get in? Like, obviously they'd have, you know, an incredibly disappointing Six Nations. The likes of Cowan Dickey and
Jamie George,
yeah.
Well, I would have thought maybe both of those were lucky enough. And this, again, comes back to the argument we're having. You know, hooker is up for grabs aside from Ken Owens. And I suppose it seems like he's kind of gone with tried and trusted in Jamie George, and then going for that kind of a little bit of more of a mobile option in Cowan Dickey, because he is a little bit quicker. He's better at getting around the field. But yeah, two lucky guys to go. I mean, if you look at England's Six Nations and how they fared and how they played, you know, a number of their guys can see themselves as lucky. Like, if you're going to say Johnny Sexton is extremely unlucky to go, then you'd have to say that Owen Farrell is extremely lucky to go, because I didn't think he had a good Six Nations. And it was a shock that he was included and Johnny wasn't, because, yeah, Dan Biggar, brilliant. He had a brilliant Six Nations. They won the competition fine. Finn Russell, he does something different. Maybe the other 10s don't bring. Grand, you bring him. But between Johnny and Owen, I don't understand how Johnny wasn't picked. I can only presume it was because he plays 12 as well.
Yeah, like even looking at the way the squad was laid out, just with the halfbacks, the out halves, it was just Biggar and Russell that were down as the out halves, and Farrell was named in the centre. So obviously, it's just like I said, having the tools and the toolkit there to be able to use, get the best out of the players that you have, and that's probably unfortunate for Johnny, as we can see. You're very
but they're going to play him. I guarantee you, he'll play a lot of 10 over there.
Yeah,
I guarantee he'll play a lot of 10. Maybe they'll prove me wrong, but I could see him playing. Could see him playing more 10 than 12 over there. That would be my opinion.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Like, sure, even in a match day squad, sure, you need, you know, one starting and one on the bench. So there's only three of them over there. You know, with the quick turnaround of games, he's going to have to either be playing out half or covering out half. I'd certainly agree with that. The other one that we spoke about, Fergie, last week on the show was, the concern with the Saracens players, like coming off a poor Six Nations, they now won't have had any challenging games for, 4 months leading into the tour. So you've got like the likes of Farrell, Vunipolo, obviously Jamie Atoje. George and Atoje, who have very little rugby under their belt going on the tour. And we saw how that affected them at the start of the Six Nations. It's going to have to be a concern for the Lions.
You'd imagine so, yeah. And I'd say those guys will get thrown straight in once those midweek games start, you know, and they'll get exposed there. To be fair, you know, just from what I hear, you know, the training for the Lions is quite physical pretty quickly. So, you know, I'd imagine they'll be brought up to speed on that front. But in terms of competitive matches, but really bar the guys that we playing a little bit of Rainbow Cup. Is that up to the same standard? No, it's not. So, like, I think a lot of them will be in similar boats. But, you know, for the likes of an Atoje, and to be fair to Farrell, still shocked that he went, you know, but to be fair to him and Atoje, they are the type of players that, like, they are so good. Sometimes they can come off the back of not playing for quite a while and getting up to that level. So we'll just have to wait and see.
Right. We'll be back in just a moment, and we'll be chatting to South African journalist Craig Ray. To take you there, here is House of Rugby UK's Lee McKenzie talking to Lions backs coach Gregor Townsend after today's squad announcement.
Well, Gregor, great to see you. An interesting announcement that has certainly captured the minds of the rugby world. When you look at that squad, let's start from, if we may, a Scottish point of view. You must be very proud of the number of Scots that there are in this British and Irish Lions squad.
Yes, I'm delighted for the players that are selected. I can only imagine what it's been like for them this morning, building up to the announcement. So, no, we know. I know those guys, and I'm very pleased for them. I know they'll be excellent lines from, again, the guys that have missed out, whether they're from Scotland, Ireland, England, or Wales. I know how tough it is. I got the dreaded phone call in 2001. To say I wasn't going to be part of that tour, so it is really tough. It's you reflect back on it thinking it's one of the biggest disappointments of your career, so mixed emotions, but obviously very delighted for those 8 Scots.
Yeah, that's interesting as well from your point of view, because you're obviously sitting here with your coach's cap on, but the fact that you have been there, you've experienced the highs and that disappointment, as you mentioned, it must give you a sort of great insight into the minds of the people who have been selected today, and also those who have missed out, because big names have missed out.
Yeah, and that's a testament to the quality of player that the four countries are producing. The last couple of Six Nations have been really competitive between those four countries. And you now see some big names not going. Like the debates that we had around each position, they were difficult because, you know, there's one, sometimes three or four players that could easily be excellent lines in the summer and may yet still be a line. There will be injuries between now and before, and when we leave to South Africa, there'll be injuries in those first couple of weeks. But yeah, I do feel for those that miss out, but obviously you've got to look forward to the group that you're going to work with. Those 37 players are outstanding players, and they'll be excited. They can't wait to come in, I'd imagine, and get to know their teammates, get to know what's happening over this next few weeks.
And you mentioned 37 players, because originally, until last night, it was 36 players that everyone was talking about, and then Warren sneaked another one in.
Yeah, well, we didn't know if that was going to be confirmed till last night as well. So we finalised the selection around about 5 o'clock, and we were hoping that we'd get the okay for 37, because we'd have to go back and someone would have to be taken off the list. And then around about 7 o'clock last night, we got the thumbs up, so then we could have a couple of drinks. And it was a big relief. Like, yeah, we're really excited about the squad, but to finally get to the position where we can announce the group and get on to looking forward to working with the group was great.
Alan Wynne-Jones, let's have a nod to him. He has broken all records in terms of test match appearances. He is so highly decorated, and to get this honour as the captain of the Lions, it really is the cherry on top of the cake, isn't it?
Yeah, this is his fourth Lions tour. Already that is a huge achievement. So many test caps and so many wins. To come back this year after winning, becoming most capped test player, and then to go on and lead his team to Six Nations Championships shows the influence he has over others, shows his own ability, his own durability, but the influence over his team to turn them into winners is something that we are obviously more than hoping. We're confident he'll do the same with the Lions.
Gregor, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe. Game changed.
Craig, thank you so much for coming on with us all the way from South Africa. Have you been flat out since the squad was named earlier on this evening?
Yeah, absolutely. And sort of happened right on deadline for us. So, I had to just get some names out and then obviously rewriting. I think the Duan Fundamava angle is quite good from a South African point of view as well.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that, actually. Yeah. And what are you making of the major omissions from the squad? I suppose notably being a Munster person here and an Irish, you know, CJ Stander, that South African connection would have been nice, but it's still nice to have the Van der Merwe connection as well.
Yeah, I'm not too surprised CJ Stander was left out. I suppose when he announced that he was retiring and he was still eligible to the end of the international window, I think he maybe knew what was coming. So, you know, he's a good player and, you know, he is probably going to be in South Africa at the time. So I haven't seen the official sort of long list of reserves. Perhaps he's on that and, you know, he would be quite a handy guy to have, you know, in Pretoria ready to hop into a bubble if needs be.
Yeah, absolutely. What are the big surprises down in South Africa? Like what names are making headlines at the moment, either from being selected or from not being selected?
Well, I think, you know, looking at some of the omissions, I suppose Johnny Sexton is a big surprise and he's such a big name. And I know he's had his injury problems and his form hasn't been great, but, you know, he's been there and done it. He's got a lot of experience. So I'm quite surprised Sexton, you know, isn't at least in the broader squad. James Ryan's another one, you know, good, tough forward. I guess someone like Courtney Lawser is, you know, pretty physical character as well. So, yeah, it probably came down to maybe that call. The rest, I guess it's selection, right? They're such close calls. There's a few here and there you could argue about, but, not knowing enough of the players' club form, I reckon Gatland's probably got it spot on. It's quite a small line squad as well by recent sort of history, probably three or four players fewer than before. So I guess that limited options around the squad selection.
Do you think that you guys, Craig, from a South African perspective, do you think it will be a challenge, you know, getting up to speed? You know, these Lions guys, granted, they're coming from different nations, you know, but they have played at Six Nations. They've played high-level club rugby, most of them European-wise. And then on the flip side, you've got a South African team that, yeah, they are the World Cup winners, but the last game they had together was in the World Cup final, and they're about to play the best of four nations up here. You know, it's going to be a big challenge for them, because the only warm-up game you guys have is the United States.
Yeah, it's that's definitely a challenge, but I guess, you know, they just have to live with it. There is, you know, a lot of the overseas-based Springboks have been playing regularly club rugby in the Northern Hemisphere, so there's quite a few players out of sort of France, England, that have been getting some game time. And then we have had some domestic competitions going, and the Rainbow Cup South African version started last week, and I must say it was the first time I felt the Sharks played against the Stormers. So it was sort of brought Sia Khaleesi against his old team. And it was the first time I felt, watching domestic rugby since sort of lockdown, that there was a real intensity about the game. And it was quite a high quality match, and was good to see. The guy, it looked like they had just flicked a switch and they were into it. And it's sort of Peter Steph Du Toit, for instance, he came back after 398 days out of rugby, nearly lost his leg, nearly had to be amputated early last March. You know, has multiple operations, you know, had a 10-inch scar down his thigh, you know, lost nearly 15 kilograms of muscle mass, has come back, first game in 398 days, and it was like it was the World Cup final all over again. He was absolutely smashing guys. And I saw Sia Khaleesi yesterday, and I was just chatting to him, and I said, Sia, how was, you know, never mind your form, what did you think of Peter Steph's form? And he just sort of shook his head and smiled, and he said, that's just amazing. That guy is a machine, and that's what we need. So I think there's a lot of confidence. You know, they just sort of flick a switch, these guys, when they get on. And if they've got a bit of game time under the belt, which they will have from domestic rugby, when they get into that Springbok bubble, it will be, you know, all out gung ho. And I think you'll be surprised how formidable they'll be. We'll be surprised how formidable they'll be as well.
We actually had Peter Steph on the show a couple of months ago, and his story was just phenomenal. I think he was a good distance away from returning to the field of rugby, and obviously with COVID and that, things were challenging, but he was phenomenal, and his story was phenomenal. And to play at the weekend, I saw the tweet, didn't see the game, but, you know, it just brought such joy when, you know, as athletes as well, you do anything to get back out on the field. And with, as you said, 390 days out, it's a phenomenal layoff from rugby, and to be as sharp as he was is, I suppose, a testament to him and his hard work. But you said it there, what way will South Africa play? Like the squad that he has named, you know, it's going for the big ball carriers as well, but, you know, people like Bundy, Aki and Chris Harris over Gary Ringrose and Henry Slade, like is that because of the way that South Africa will play? Like, what will we expect from South Africa?
Yeah, South Africa will play like you saw them play in the World Cup. When I say in the World Cup, I mean in the knockout stages of the World Cup. So, yeah, it's percentage rugby. It's the bomb squad coming off the bench. It's, you know, set piece defense, all those things you kind of associate with South African rugby, and it's just how sharp they'll be. That's not going to change a hell of a lot. You know, the Highveld will make it slightly faster, perhaps. You know, these two tests on the Highveld. They'll be quite high tempo games, but they'll bring that tempo to the style they have, and they won't change the style. It will just, you know, maybe quicker ruck ball, maybe a few more options running off the rucks. It will be sort of big runners down the fly half inside center channel. Peter Steph Du Toit, Sia Khaleesi running onto flat passes. So someone like Bundy Aki in that channel will be quite, you know, crucial. So, yeah, I don't think you'll see anything different from the Springboks. It will be World Cup knockout rugby, because it's a three-test series, which is essentially a World Cup knockout, isn't it?
I think I thought actually South Africa's biggest weapon at the last World Cup that people probably didn't talk about as much was actually their defensive line speed that they brought. And I think the amount of tries that they actually scored off the back of their defense and turning the ball over and knocking teams behind the gain line, putting pressure on, you know, getting the likes of Peter Steph and Khaleesi over the ball was phenomenal. I think that was just a team throughout the World Cup, and you saw in the final, England just couldn't break them down. And after what they did to the All Blacks, it just made it so impressive. And I think it's going to be an interesting one to see what way the Lions are going to approach that and try and break them down with their attacking strategy. And I actually think, we talked just before you came on there, I think some of the selections from Warren Gatland would point towards them trying to move the ball around a bit, you know, and trying to maybe use certain plays with certain players in certain positions to get the ball to the edges and shift around this very, very big South African team.
Yeah, I mean, Gatland's a smart coach. And yeah, you look at some of those selections, Harris, Finn Russell, if he's in the test mix, Stuart Hogg, great runners. But, you know, great runners are only as good as the platform they're going to be running off. And if their forwards are not winning the battle, it's going to be difficult to be sort of, you know, trying to get the ball to the tips when you're on the back foot against a Springbok defense that will be in your face all day. And I think, yeah, it certainly won't, maybe the Springboks won't be as cohesive as they were at the World Cup just through lack of game time. That might be one factor that makes their defense less watertight. And I think that's why it's crucial Jacques Nienaber will be hoping that most of the World Cup players are fit, because then he doesn't have to, you know, educate a new player in the defensive system or in what's required. So if Delenda's fit, Pollard's just come back, which is crucial. Faf de Klerk's fit, you know, those guys can stay fit. Lucanio Am's playing for the Sharks, he's fit. And Cheslin Kolbe's, of course, in great form in France. And, then it just comes down to, you know, the full Springbok backline, particularly in the defensive line, being fit. And they all look like they are. They got some problems. The Springboks' lock is looking a worry. Eben Nesbitt's just come back. Lurt de Jager's touch and go. RG Snyman's touch and go. I think Franco Mostert's just come back to action. So the four World Cup locks, two of them are only just returning to action now, and we don't know what their fitness. So that's going to be a big blow to the Springboks if they have to find new second rowers, in terms of what they plan to do with the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Snyman actually had a setback again last week after coming back from that ACL injury. So that's, I suppose, not good news for you. But again, like, playing high quality rugby week in, week out is key to those players. And like, no doubt they will gel together. And obviously the Lions will have a similar problem. You know, you're bringing four nations together, and sure, you suppose you have to get a game plan and a system in place. And it all makes for very, very exciting rugby. But in South Africa, how is the excitement building as a nation? You know, will stadiums be full? Will there be spectators allowed at the games? Like, what do we think the plans are?
The stadiums won't be full, that's for sure. If there are fans at the stadiums, it will be limited numbers. So there's still a lot of discussion going on. Actually, I spoke to someone at SARU today, and they really are hoping that government. And apparently the word was there's been some progress. So it looks like national government might concede to allowing some fans into the stadium, but I don't think it'll be more than 10,000, at any given moment. And that's just a guess based on some conversations I've had. So it's going to be a very different Lions tour for everyone, right? And especially for the Lions. I mean, you know, even as the host nation, one of the great things about the Lions is the tens of thousands of red shirts you see in the stands and the atmosphere that brings, the unique atmosphere it brings. And that's all going to be gone. And it's going to be tough on the players, but I guess they've got used to that, haven't they? I mean, I thought the Six Nations delivered some massively intense games in empty stadiums. I thought it was some pretty high quality stuff in the Six Nations. So we know the players can deliver the intensity despite, you know, the external factors that are not working in their favor. And I think the Springbok players will be the same. You know, it's what, you know, they find the passion from within. You know, they don't run out and play for the 80,000 people in the stadium. They play for other things, as we've heard with the Springboks. They play for the people back home or for poverty. Sia Khaleesi's playing for, you know, starving kids in places that, you know, he comes from. That they draw on that internal motivation, and I'm sure the Lions players will as well. So I think the intensity will be there. It's just for us as viewers, it's going to be a slightly hollow experience.
But I think ideally, you know, it would be great to have fans in whatever capacity. But even if there isn't, though, Craig, you know, I can imagine it'll still provide an enormous buzz and lift for the South African people. I know it will back here for all of the countries watching, because, you know, for quite a while there was question marks whether it was going to go ahead. So the Lions even just getting over there and making sure this goes ahead is the main thing, because I'm sure the South African people need a lift as everyone else does.
Absolutely. I mean, Springbok rugby, as you pointed out, by the time they play the first or the USA test, will be something close to 600 days since they previously played a test match. So, South Africans are dying to see the world champions playing. And when the Lions tour was confirmed, that was a lot of happy people. And I think today the naming of the Lions squad just makes it real. It just makes it feel like it's going to happen. You know, after all the angst and all the uncertainty of the last year, it just felt like we had a pivotal moment today in for this particular tour, but for South African rugby as well. And make no mistake, South African rugby needs the revenue from the television money. We're going to lose a bit of revenue on the gate, but the television money is going to make a massive, massive impact to South Africa's coffers. And rugby, if this line, insiders have told me, if the Lions tour doesn't go ahead, South African rugby could collapse. I mean, it's that vital to the rugby economy in South Africa.
Yeah, it's more than just rugby, isn't it? When you spell it out like that, there's a lot more on the line for it. But I think, you know, we as a podcast have talked a lot about the Lions, and we are absolutely super excited that it finally has got to go ahead and the games will go ahead with squad names and everything. It's definitely building. I suppose one thing that I never mentioned just in our earlier chat was, you know, going through the positions and that, we never mentioned the back row really, apart from CJ Stander being an omission, a clear omission there. But what I think, it will be an absolutely huge battle in the back row, whoever are selected. But in relation to the Lions, what three players do you see them going with in the back row? Like, is he going to go on form, power, strength? What will he do?
Well, that's a tough one. I mean, I think Faletau's got to be a starter if he's fit and playing well. And then it just depends how he wants to combine his flanks. Does he want to go for a sort of a smaller, jackal to the ball? Maybe someone like Hamish Watson. But then I guess with the Springboks' physicality, you're going to have to balance it out with maybe a second really big back rower. Maybe Courtney Laws starts at blindside flank if you go with Hamish Watson. That might be quite a smart back row against the Springboks, with Laws playing in the flank and a big number eight, and then a Hamish Watson type player, because someone like Laws will also give you more line-out options, which will also put a lot of pressure on the Springboks. So, yeah, that's just a thumb suck.
Maro Itoje as well can play six.
Sure, exactly. Maro Itoje can as well. So there's options there. And, I guess that's part of it. I don't know how you guys feel, but is Alan Wynne-Jones guaranteed a starting place in the test lineup? I mean, I know there was a comment Gatlin made today on TV where he said, you know, he's the touring captain, but he's got to sort of perform well enough to make the team. And that sort of just got me thinking, is Wynne-Jones necessarily the first choice starter, second rower? I guess he would have to be in the first test, but it sounds like there's some thought going into that as well.
Well, Craig, we got it completely wrong. We had predicted our Lions team a few weeks back, and we were way off, I'm sure, like a lot of the people out there. So who knows what's going to happen. But thank you so much for coming on from chatting to myself and Fergus. We'll be back in a moment with Victor Matfield and Ian Madigan.
If you haven't already done so, click subscribe on House of Rugby Ireland to never miss a show.
All right, we have Ian back in with us for part three, and it is our real pleasure to welcome along 127 times capped Springbok legend and star of the 2009 Test Series with the Lions, Victor Matfield. Victor, welcome back to the show. You were on with us about 12 months ago. Little did we know we would still be living in a world so badly affected by COVID-19, but how is all down in South Africa?
Yeah, thank you very much. We didn't know if we're going to see a Lions series here in South Africa. We didn't know if they coming here or we going there. I still think we don't know if there's going to be fans in the stadium, but at least the tour's going ahead. We're very excited. Everyone in South Africa can't wait. We haven't had a lot of domestic rugby as well. We've been following quite a lot of the European rugby, but yeah, it's great, and we can't wait for the British Isles Lions to arrive in South Africa.
Yeah, it's great to finally have some confirmation of fixtures and that where it's on. There was so much talk about it so early on. But before we get started into the Lions chat, I'm looking at your camera there and I can see a lovely array of jerseys behind you. Pride of place, an Irish jersey up on your wall.
Yeah, I think every South African loves going up to Europe at the end of the year, normally over November. And yeah, so I collected one of each country. Never had the opportunity to win a Grand Slam. We were actually in 2000 and what was that? 10. I was captaining the side, and we actually came very close to winning the Grand Slam. And then we lost against Scotland in a very wet Murrayfield. The one game that we thought was probably going to be the easy one. So I got close to it, but yeah, great to play against the European countries and the Five Nations teams like they're up there.
Victor, it would have been great to, obviously the Rainbow Cup didn't happen the way it was planned with all the travelling, but it would have been a great opportunity to travel, obviously, like you said, some of Europe and for some of the European teams to travel down to a warmer climate. But it is great, I suppose, that there is some rugby happening in South Africa.
Yeah, we're getting into the Rainbow Cup. It's not part of the Pro 14 at the moment, but hopefully later on we'll be able to join. It's nice to see the teams also with all the Springboks and everyone that's playing in South Africa, almost our top teams that would play in the old days in the Super Rugby competition. So, yeah, it's good rugby. They've got some time to prepare and to play themselves into the South African team. We actually had a nice chat to Jock Nienaber on Monday evening. We have a Super Rugby show here on Monday evenings. We got him into the show, and yeah, they sound pretty confident that we'll be able to get the team together. They'll probably have 6 weeks with the Japanese players and at least 4 weeks with the whole team together. So yeah, it helps us that a lot of our players are also playing outside of South Africa, so they're playing a lot of rugby. There'll probably be about 30-40% of the players coming out of South Africa. So it's just getting everyone together, getting them to understand the game. But I don't think we'll see a lot of changes from the team that has won the World Cup 2 years back. So I think the Bulls are looking pretty good at the moment. If you look at the last few months or from the beginning of the year with Jake White arriving there, getting in quite a few new players like Dwayne Vermeulen, got Morne Steinbeck, and he's actually getting a lot of youngsters. He's giving them a lot of playing time at the moment, and they're doing very well. So it looks like they've got the old culture back. I think it's 14 games at Loftus unbeaten at the moment, so they're really making Loftus the fortress again, Fortress Loftus, like we always talked about it. So yeah, the Bulls are looking strong. They've signed Marcel Kutsia as well now. That's a huge signing for the Bulls. Johan Huisson's coming back from France as well. He's been the European Player of the Year a few years back. So yeah, a few good signings. But the nice thing is that they're starting to build a culture, winning culture there. And I mean, 2 weeks ago they played against, or last week they played against the Lions, only with youngsters, and they still won the game. So great culture that they're building at the Bulls at the moment.
Yeah, Victor, I actually had the joy of playing with Marcel in Ulster, and you know, he's a fantastic player and an even better person. We were gutted that he decided to go back to South Africa and play with the Bulls. He's certainly someone we'll very much be fearing coming up against. I think we tried to put a clause in his contract that he couldn't play against us. I actually asked for the clause because I don't want him running at me. But I think with the likes of him leading the Bulls next year, hopefully we'll see the South African teams competing right up at the top of the Rainbow Cup.
No, I don't think... the European guys have seen the best of South Africa with the Cheetahs and the Kings playing over there. I think with us bringing our four strongest teams over, it will be a different South African vibe coming into the competition. I mean, if you look at the Bulls team, the loose forwards with Dwayne Vermeulen, Marcel Kutsier, just a fantastic team. So, yeah, I think we'll be very competitive. Also, the coaches, I mean, a guy like Jake White has coached all over the world. He understands the conditions as well. It's actually a pity we couldn't come over now, I think, because the conditions probably getting better there. It's pretty close to the South African conditions, being summer over there now. We know it's very difficult November, December, when it's really wet. It's just scrumming and driving and kicking most of the time. But yeah, I think the players will be able to adapt. But Marcel is a fantastic guy. I was fortunate enough to play with him. I must say, I think if it wasn't that he had so many injuries, he would have been close to 100 games for South Africa. He's one of those talented players. Unfortunately, all the time, on the wrong times, he gets injuries. But let's hope he will be ready. He might be a guy that come into that Springbok setup that weren't at the World Cup that can make a difference against the British.
Victor, when Ian heard that the Rainbow Cup was going to be formed, he was so happy because, you know, he was delighted to finally get to play some rugby in some good weather. So Ian is most disappointed that he doesn't get a trip down to South Africa.
Yeah, I think the guys will really enjoy it. Dry weather, the backs can throw it around. It's all about pace in the game as well. And it's a different game, especially if you come over to South Africa this time of year. We always said there's one thing playing a test team. Normally the test team is big, heavy guys. But in Super Rugby, the teams that normally won will probably... quick teams that loose forwards that can run around the park, that was very athletic. So it's a different game when it's nice and dry and you can throw it around. The altitude as well. So we'll enjoy getting guys over and to experience the altitude as well.
I suppose while you're on, we might as well talk about the big talking point today, the Lions Tour. What was your initial response to the announcement?
Yes, there was a lot of talk, firstly, about the captaincy. I thought they'll go with Alan Wynn. He's someone everyone looks up to. There was a lot of talk about Itoje taking the captain's armband. But not being the captain of England, I think going into a big squad like that, taking the leadership role will be very difficult. I think Alan has been very successful. He played really well in the Six Nations as well. He's a guy that everyone respects. I think 157 tests already behind his name. So he's so experienced. So I think he's a great guy leading them. I had the privilege to have a few nights with him. He leads in the bars as well. So not just on the field, he leads off the field as well. He's a great guy. So, and it'll probably be one of his last tours as well. So he would like to come out, be successful. He was the winning captain in Australia as well. So he knows how to...
We had South African reporter Craig Ray on just before you, and he questioned how much game time Alan Wynn was going to get. Can you see him playing all the tests?
Yes, I think so. Don't know if they'll play him through, but I mean, we had John Smith as our captain and we had a guy like Bismarck on the bench. And a lot of the time, John played 40 to 50 minutes and then Bismarck will come on and then I took over the captaincy from him. So I don't think that's something that bothers the team. And I mean, these days, you've got a leadership group as well. So if the captain's not on the field, most of the work gets done off the field. Pulling the guys together, getting them in the same direction, getting them to buy into the coach's plan. So that's going to be very important. But I think he'll start all three test matches if he's the captain.
There was a good bit of talk in the lead up to selection about some of the South Africans that could have got picked for the Lions. Obviously, CJ Stander missed out and Duhan van der Merwe has been selected, you know, as one of the wingers for the back three. Was there much talk in South Africa about those two guys?
Yeah, we all know that CJ retired now, so it would have been good for the team to have him in the squad. I don't know if he was available for selection. But just someone that knows a bit more of South Africa. It's always nice to have someone like that in your team. When you go to a town to take the guys around, even just to give them the thinking of the South Africans, how they will think about certain things. So yeah, I think they could have done with a guy like CJ. But, I mean, if you look at those loose forwards, there's not even space for Billy Vunipolo. That I think is a big surprise that he's not in the team. I think if you want to beat South Africa in South Africa, you probably need a lot of physical players. So Billy Vunipolo and probably Tuilagi. I don't know where he is with injury, if he would have been ready for the tour, but those two guys I would have thought was probably certainties in the team, and they're not there at the moment. So, yeah, interesting, and it's always interesting to see a squad get picked like this.
Yeah, I think 12 months ago, they would have been two guys that would have been probably first on the team sheet. Unfortunately for Billy Vunipolo, it's been difficult with Saracens being relegated. He hasn't had top-level rugby. He had a poor Six Nations, probably because he was undercooked going into it. And then Tuilagi just simply hasn't played enough rugby. He's just had injury after injury. And I'd say it's probably just too much of a risk to hope that he'd get back fit. So definitely two guys that are unlucky with how things panned out. And they are, big losses to the Lions.
Yeah, Victor, focusing on the second row, are you disappointed that James Ryan won't be making an appearance or won't be touring with the Lions?
No, again, if you look at the second rowers, I would say in the three first choice guys will probably be Toji, Alan Wynn, and then Courtney Laws. I've played with Courtney at Northampton. For South Africa, I think he's the right guy to have there. He can come off the bench, he can play four and five, he can cover the front and the back spot. So the three of them are there. So, yeah, it's always difficult. There's always guys losing out. There's always guys being injured just before a tour, like you said, with Billy and Tuilagi, not having enough time. And then you have to decide. I mean, we did it in 2015 where we took probably about five, six guys that haven't played a lot of rugby, but we knew if we get to the playoff stages, they'll be very important for the team. And we lost against Japan because we thought that's the opportunity to give them playing time. So it's always a risk. But in the long run, you must decide once you get to those test matches, who's going to be able to win your test matches. And are you able, and especially in a big squad like this, to take risk with one or two key players, take them into the tournament a little uncooked?
A lot of players have said that the 2009 tour of South Africa was, up there with the very best of tours any of them have been on. Obviously, South Africa is an incredible country to visit, and the people are very friendly, and the climate's very accommodating in itself. But I also think the timing of the tour was great. Social media wasn't taking over. Players were able to get out and experience the great things that South Africa has to offer. For you guys on the other side, what was it like being the kind of host nation? Your experience of that tour?
Yeah, I sit in and I really get goosebumps when I think about it. It's just different to anything else. I was fortunate enough to play four World Cups. You only get one opportunity to play against the British and Irish Lions. Probably different for you guys because you do it every 4 years. We get once in 12 years. So most players only get one opportunity. And luckily, it was in a year we were world champions. We were tri-nations champions. We beat the British and Irish. We beat the All Blacks three times before we played the British Irish Lions. So we were really on top form. And they arrived here with a great team. I mean, it's always tough playing against England or Ireland or Wales or Scotland. But when they combine, they're pretty tough to beat. So, just an unbelievable experience. I'll never forget. I think that second test at Loftus was probably one of the better British Irish Lions tests versus the Springboks ever. And lying that morning in my hotel room, Loftus is where I played all my club rugby as well, and being used to seeing Loftus only blue for the Bulls or only green when the Springboks play there. I was lying in the room and they were showing Loftus and I could only see red. There was only red running onto the stadium. It felt like we were tricking them because there were no South African supporters. And I think that's what makes it special. So I don't know what's going to happen, but for the players' sake, I really hope we can get some fans over to just to experience that with all their fans coming over, sitting in the stadium, singing their songs. Yeah, it's just a great experience.
Victor, from chatting to some of the other players that were involved in the Lions test in 2009, they've said, because similar to what Ian said, you know, because the time difference as well worked out well, it meant that you actually had time to socialise with the players after the game, whereas the Australian and New Zealand tests, with the time difference, the games were later for TV and that. So what players, you know, was it great to be able to hang out with the Lions players? And like, was there any lasting friendships that you made throughout the tour?
Yeah, we had a great opportunity after the, especially the third test. We had a big dinner and a big function afterwards. And yeah, it was nice. I mean, I've got a very good relationship with Paul O'Connell. He's big mates with some of my big mates in South Africa. They do business together. And I remember, yes, which year was it when they beat us in the mist? And I think Paul stole about four balls from me in the line-out. They really gave me a lot of crap. Yeah, having them over here, it's always nice to spend time with the guys like that. You don't always get time, even if we play in the Southern Hemisphere. Like you say, we don't have the functions that you guys normally have after the games. So it's in and out, and you try and see each other. There's some guys that you'll probably see in the week before a test match just to catch up, have a coffee or whatever. But, yeah, to sit down, to have a few beers together, to have a lot of – just to have a chat about it and to talk about the experiences is really great. So always nice. We really like each other. And it was actually so interesting. I saw a program the other day where Brian O'Driscoll talked about where I was chasing him in that Loftus game the whole time. And I can remember something like that. I don't know why I was obsessed with him before the game. And I was into him quite a bit in the game. But, I mean, a few years back, we played the golf tournament together in the same team, or we played against each other. But we had so much fun together. So, yes, we're very competitive on the field. But once we get off the field, we really enjoy each other's company.
That that second test of that tour was without doubt one of the most famous games of the professional era. Could you sense, you know, in the lead up to the game, even the warm up of the game, could you sense that South Africa were on and ready to go? Did you feel like it was just going to be one of those days?
Yeah, it's difficult because I think we were probably a bit more charged up for the first game in Durban. Because everyone was talking about the South African team. Because we won in 2007, we're getting older. We probably passed our best. And although we did very well in the Tri Nations. And I remember in Durban, there came a question. Buckies and myself were sitting on the panel for the media. And they were like, is Paul O'Connell and them, are they going to take over from off? Us, oh, can we stay the best combination? I just saw Buckies' grin. I knew we were in trouble. We're going to be up for this. And went out very physical in Durban. Well, we're going into Loftus. We wanted to finish it. But when we saw again, they were in front and we were almost in trouble. I think Peter made great substitutions, bringing Mornay Steyn on that used to playing at Loftus, Jacques Fourie coming on that second half, and those guys had a big impact. The guys off the bench just really made a difference. So, yeah, we were probably caught off guard a little bit, but luckily, because we've played together for so long and we've been in those situations, if you look back at the 2007 World Cup, against Tonga, we were in trouble, we came back. Against Fiji, we were almost in trouble, came back. So we knew how to handle it. And luckily, we had a group of senior players that could keep the team calm and, pull it back.
So, Victor, finally, before we wrap up, can you tell us a little bit about that tradition, the South African tradition about the Springbok skin that's hanging proudly on your wall behind you?
Yeah, so when Jake White came in, there was always, we always get this trophies after a game for the best tackle, the most tackles and everything. And he changed all of that. He said there's only going to be one for the man of the match. It won't be the man of the match that that get announced on the day at the game. It will be something in the team, someone doing something special or someone just really having a great game. I must, I think Scott Berger probably got about 100 of those at home. He was man of the match. Jake just loved him. He was always man of the match. And of course, the way Scott played, he always put in a special effort. So I was lucky enough to win that in the World Cup final in 2007. Very proud of it. And that was a great day for us. Yeah,
great story. Really great story. Victor, it has been fantastic having you on. Absolutely love chatting to you. I hope that you enjoy the Lions series and that we get to see lots of rugby. Cheers, guys, and cheers to everybody for watching and listening today. A huge thanks to producer Pat, Paul, Cullum, Anthony, Dermot, and everyone that helped getting this show together. This has been House of Rugby Ireland here on Joe.
House of Rugby Ireland here on Joe. Game changed.